My family's in danger. Outside our apartment building, the Burmese authorities watch us and use slingshots to smash windows on the building.
Myanmar exiles seek shelter. It's Tuesday, April 6th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, examining hate toward Asian Americans. U.S. South China Sea presence remains strong. Afghan women burn art. A new market for digital products. News from the final frontier. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Hundreds of civilians in Myanmar, including activists, members of former de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy, and villagers in the ethnic areas, are being bombed by the army, and they've gone into hiding. Some are seeking refuge in Kayin State, opposite Thailand. It's a region controlled by the Karen National Union, an ethnic armed organization that is no stranger to conflict, having been fighting for greater autonomy in Myanmar for more than 7 decades. Steve Sanford is in Maesat, Thailand, where he tells us more.
Here in Maesat, signs of increased security can be seen along the border as the conflict escalates across the river in Myanmar's Kayin State. Thousands of civilians have gone into hiding as government forces continue a brutal crackdown on the civilian population, including indiscriminate air attacks. For some migrants, like this former Karen soldier whose working wife is stranded in Yangon with 2 children, the daily updates from home are distressing.
My family's in danger. Outside our apartment building, the Burmese authorities watch us and use slingshots to smash windows on the building. And they arrest people because the Burmese authorities don't want them to resist.
Some exiles, like Miatu, a former member of the All Burma Students Democratic Front, fled the country after the 1988 uprising, when the military cracked down on anti-government demonstrations, killing hundreds of protesters. It has been 30 years since Miatu took up arms with ethnic armies in Kayin State, but the former activist still volunteers advice to all who face persecution by the coup leaders.
I suggest those people in danger to contact nearest ethnic arms groups, which I think is very, very safe for them to hide at the moment.
Despite international condemnation, Myanmar's forces continue brutal attacks on unarmed civilians as the death toll mounts. That's why the Karen National Union is getting set to provide sanctuary for fleeing Myanmar citizens of all ethnic nationalities.
We have prepared the land to accommodate the people who are fleeing to a safe place in our Karen area, more than 400 acres of Myanmar exiles.
As the Myanmar army continues a vicious crackdown on civilians, the number of those fleeing to the border is expected to rise. Steve Sanford for VOA News, Maesat, Thailand.
You'll find more on the developing Myanmar story and all of the other stories you hear on our program by following us online on our social media platforms and at our voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Brunei calls for ASEAN meeting to discuss Myanmar situation. Taiwan reports new incursion by Chinese jets into defense zone. India reaches record number of daily COVID cases. India grapples with rising Maoist violence fueled by pandemic. Facing pressure at home, Chinese tech giants expand in Singapore. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and so much more on our Facebook page at VOA Asia and follow us on our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A flagship Chinese research organization recently said U.S. military forces had an unusually intense presence in the South China Sea last year, as Washington sought to check Beijing's maritime expansion. According to the report issued by the South China Sea Strategic Situation Probing Initiative, military forces deployed to the South China Sea were of large scale and duration. The U.S. Indo-Pacific Command in Hawaii confirms 10 warship passages into the sea last year, following 10 in 2019. Just 5 were logged in each of the 2 years before 2019. In July, the U.S. Air Force also acknowledged sending a B-52 Stratofortress bomber to join 2 aircraft carriers in a South China Sea exercise. China has the strongest armed forces among regional powers, prompting other claimants to look toward the United States for support. Oh Yi-sun is a senior fellow with the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, specializing in Southeast Asia.
The reality is, of course, they would like to carve out a sort of sphere of influence and a sort of a buffer zone. And the U.S. is, of course, trying to break through both of this.
Analysts say U.S. forces effectively slowed China's militarization of the sea, as well as any ambitions to expand or capture islets. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam vie with Beijing's claims to the 3.5 million square kilometer waterway. Southeast Asian claimants to the sea, all militarily weaker than China, welcome the U.S. maritime presence, but worry that too much of it will prompt China to sustain its own, according to Sherman Lockman, senior foreign policy and security studies analyst with the Institute of Strategic and International Studies in Malaysia.
It is both a deterrent as well a way for China to say, look, we are there because of Americans.
Last April, a U.S. warship joined one from Australia to flex muscle in sensitive waters near China's survey ship in the South China Sea, and also to show that they were supporting Malaysia. China will keep building up its position at sea, but will not be able to stop the U.S. activity, according to analysts like Fabrizio Bazzato, senior research fellow at the Tokyo-based Sasakawa Peace Foundation's Ocean Policy Research Institute.
In Beijing, they know very well that the U.S. and its allies have the naval supremacy, Indo-Pacific-wise, and also in the South China Sea. And they know very well that an incident will have very serious consequences. In summation, China will complain vocally, continue with its military build-up, deploying new and more modern forces there, but they will not be able to do much to oppose the freedom of navigation operations by the U.S. and its allies and other U.S.-aligned powers.
Beijing cites historical usage records to support its claims to about 90% of the sea, which is prized for fisheries and undersea fossil fuel reserves. China has alarmed the other Asian claimants by developing contested islets for military infrastructure and sending its ships into their exclusive economic zones. China is still expected to deter the Southeast Asian states from exploring for gas or oil, keep the sea open for Chinese fishing fleets, and consider landfilling more semi-submerged reefs. Washington does not have a claim to the sea, but keeps an eye on China as a rival superpower and potential threat to U.S. allies such as Taiwan and the Philippines. We thank Ralph Jennings in Taipei for sharing this story. Happening now in Asia, anti-coup protesters in Myanmar rode motorbikes through several villages Monday, a day after demonstrations against the junta turned violent. The military seized power February 1st, ousting the elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The recent shooting deaths of 8 people, including 7 of Asian descent, at spas in the Atlanta, Georgia area, have sparked a debate of what defines a hate crime. VOA Mandarin correspondent Adriana Zhang spoke with former U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Georgia, Byung-jae Park, to find out more. Today, in the second and final part of their conversation, the perceptions of Asian Americans in relation to other segments of society is explored.
Some of our other communities of colors suffer more significant injustices that gets a lot of press. A perfect example, of course, is like the George Floyd incident. I know that case is going to trial right now. And in here in Georgia, Ahmaud Arbery incident down in Brunswick, Georgia, and their frustration has boiled over. And then sometimes you get overshadowed by the Asian American incidences get overshadowed by some of these other incidences that's directed towards other communities of color, like the Black and the Latino and Hispanic communities. And so I do think that we're a little bit stuck in a hard place between sometimes we're viewed as not minority enough, and at the same time, they're not recognizing that, you know, that we also have difficulties in adjusting and progressing in society. And, you know, a lot of times it's perpetuated by such things as the model minority myth. And they think that all Asian American communities are monolithic, but they're not. There are groups of Asian Americans that suffer from, you know, poverty and low graduation rates. And so there's this narrative out there, I think, that kind of washes over what's actually happening in the communities.
Do you also think that this kind of type of stereotype makes Asian American community a more vulnerable target because maybe Asian Americans are not easily noticed in this kind of a crime?
I think that culturally we are generally programmed not to kind of raise too much trouble. And also, if you think about it, you know, over many years, we have not been as vocal about, you know, incidences of injustice and things like that. And I think we're much better, more organized to take on these type of incidences and raise awareness. And previously, Asian Americans weren't represented in certain aspects of government. I think we're seeing an increase in that at every level. And I think that's great. You know, sadly, these type of incidents have been going on for a very, very long time. And I hope that, you know, we're able to kind of learn from incidences like the shootings that occurred to use this as an opportunity to educate and have a dialogue. But why is it that, you know, groups like Asian Americans are targeted for certain types of crime? And let me add one more thing there. And the reason being, I think that Asian Americans are being targeted is we have this misperception, and we've been stereotyped a certain way by way we have been portrayed in the general media, particularly from Hollywood. And a lot of times that's not true. And it's not a reflective of how Asian Americans are. But if you don't have a close relationship with Asian Americans in your private life, you probably don't know the full extent of, you know, how we are.
So which part of the real picture of Asian American life here is not portrayed by the mainstream media?
Well, first thing is that we're not, you know, if you look at some of the movies and things like that, you know, we're not all, you know, versed in martial arts. And that's generally the primary way people knew about the Asian culture. Now, you know, every single one of us are just like everyone else. You know, we worry about the same thing, the family, education, our careers, trying to live a life and leave it better for our children. But a lot of times this model minority myth brushes aside some of the challenges that we face. They think that we're successful because as a group, there are certain groups of Asian Americans who have the average highest higher earning potential or capabilities than other groups, and they think that means they don't need any help or they have no struggles, and that's just not true.
Byung J. Park, former U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Georgia, speaking with VOA Mandarin correspondent Adriana Chong.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Vietnam's legislature voted to make Pham Minh Chinh, a member of the Communist Party with a history as a security official, the country's next prime minister. The outgoing prime minister was appointed the new president. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. A group of female artists in Afghanistan's central province of Bamyan has recently owned a small pyrography and engraving studio to promote fine arts in the region. VOA's Zafar Bamiani has more in this report narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
The art of pyrography dates back centuries. Evidence of burning designs into wood or leather has been seen in artwork from ancient Egypt, China, Rome, and Peru. Today, a handful of female students work on pyrography art at a small studio in central Afghanistan's Bamyan province. The studio's director says women's empowerment and the desire to make money were some of the reasons why they started.
Our goal was to produce artifacts and also promote tourism in this region. We also wanted to have a female presence in our business society and have an income.
Although pyrography and engraving have a long history in Bamyan province, having women become part of the predominantly male industry is a hopeful sign for the region, say some of the female artists.
Our goal is to promote arts in Afghan society and to show that women and girls can also be successful artists.
Other girls can also perform different arts and show that when it comes to artistic and economic activities. There's no difference between men and women.
The women artists say the support they are getting from the customers is encouraging.
I ordered Nelson Mandela's picture and I'm here today to pick it up. I encourage all my friends and fellow Afghans to come and buy their art pieces. Buying from such an art studio will promote women's businesses.
Regular power outages and the small size of their studio are among the difficulties the artists have to deal with. Some have called on the government to help resolve these problems.
Bamyan has a rich history with paintings and miniature arts. However, over the past decade, we have witnessed a decline. Recently, there has been a rise on a small scale, and I think the government should take action to support this industry.
The artwork pieces in this studio range anywhere from $7 to $130. The eight female artists working here say they are grateful for the opportunity to earn an income while attending school. For Zafar Bamiani in Bamyan, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, court proceedings began Monday in the appeal of former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak, who was convicted on corruption charges related to a state development fund. You can stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the record-breaking sale of a digital artwork in March is part of a rush to invest in previously unmarketable things like basketball highlights, video game art, and even tweets. Making it possible are NFTs, or non-fungible tokens. Matt Dibble explains.
Despite taking place online, the final moments of a recent Christie's art auction were dramatic. An artwork had just sold for nearly $70 million. Even the artist, Mike Winkleman, was stunned.
It's like an unfathomable number, to be quite honest. It's just crazy.
It's the third highest amount ever paid for a work by a living artist. And even more extraordinary, the work is digital, with no real physical presence other than a digital file. Every Days, the first 5,000 days, is a collage of 5,000 images made one per day over a period of 13 and a half years by Winkleman, who uses the name Beeple. Over the years, Beeple has shared these images freely on social media. So how does an artwork go from free to worth millions overnight? The secret ingredient is something called a non-fungible token, or NFT. NFTs use blockchain technology, but unlike other forms of cryptocurrency, each NFT is unique. Attaching an NFT to an artwork is a way to authenticate it with a digital signature. Digital artist Jonathan Monahan has also sold work using NFTs.
The hardest thing about being a digital artist has always been trying to get people to get behind a unique artwork that exists only as a digital file.
Last year, the NFT Art Marketplace Foundation approached Monahan about joining its roster of artists.
When I started this back in October, it was pretty quiet. There was only a dozen or so artists doing this. It's incomprehensible how much this blew up in the past 2 months.
NFTs have been around for about 3 years and are now being used to sell everything from basketball highlights, digital objects from video games, and even a tweet. The big players in the NFT field tend to be cryptocurrency insiders. Both the winner and the next highest bidder in the Beeple auction own crypto-related businesses. And though the auction was held by the old world auction house Christie's, the artwork was paid for using the Ether cryptocurrency. Like the rest of the rapidly evolving crypto world, NFTs present risks to both artists and collectors, warns investigative journalist Amy Castor.
An NFT doesn't really give you anything. It's just a token. And the only value of that is speculative. That is what somebody else is willing to pay you for it. What happens is when you get all this attention and excitement around NFTs is that more real money gets funneled into the cryptocurrency system. Then the people that have been holding those cryptocurrencies for a while can then cash out.
For Monahan, who says he has researched the crypto world, the potential benefits of using NFTs outweigh the risks.
A digital art is finally getting the recognition that it deserves, and that there's a lot of important artistic voices that are now being heard that were not being supported before.
Matt Dibble for VOA News.
SpaceX had another rough day, but still names the members of its all-civilian crew. Plus, a new study examines the effects of long-term space travel on the human body. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has The Week in Space.
Private spaceflight company SpaceX successfully test-launched its crewless Starship 11 this week from a foggy Boca Chica, Texas. The test came to an abrupt end minutes later when the rocket appeared to explode on its way back down to Earth.
1 kilometer altitude.
SpaceX engineer John Innsbrucker was providing commentary at the time.
When we got to 10 kilometers, the entry, we had some nice views from the exterior camera showing the flaps were quiet as we descended, but then we had the camera freeze up as we got into the engine ignition sequence, and so we're going to have to find out from the team what happened.
Innsbrucker spoke over the final frozen image received from Starship 11, and he made it clear that the video feed would not return. Pieces of debris crashed as far as 8 kilometers from the landing site. Meanwhile, a U.S. congressional committee this week announced an investigation into safety requirements regulators say the company violated on a commercial launch in December. But there is good news from SpaceX. The company announced the final members of the crew it plans to send on what it calls the world's first all-civilian mission to space. The Inspiration 4 mission now includes an engineer and a teacher and is slated to launch no earlier than mid-September from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. SpaceX held a fundraising raffle to select the crew.
And they're the 2 1-year crew members, Scott Kelly and Mikhail Kornienko.
In other news, the journal Circulation published a report that says in space, your heart gets smaller. Astronaut Scott Kelly spent nearly a year on board the International Space Station from 2015 to 2016. In that time, his heart shrank by more than a quarter without the constant pull of gravity to make it work harder. The study compared Kelly's heart to that of famous distance swimmer Ben Lacombe and the parallels between weightlessness in space and swimming. Finally, this week, a comet-like light show across the Pacific Northwest of the United States. It's actually debris from a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket burning up upon re-entering Earth's atmosphere. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
We thank you for spending some time with us today on VOA Asia, and we invite you to come back and join us again tomorrow at the same time. We also thank our VOA Asia team that brings you this program, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.